This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Ryan in the room, when a new guy like him comes in and you see how hard he works and plays the right way, how much does that rub off on you and the rest of the team?
What's a rub off means?
How much do you learn from that?
Okay. I used to see him in a different spot before all the time, like on the side kind of.
Mama got the remote, sister got the tub. They're going around doing the rub, your rub.
When it's all over, gonna have to rank playoff
ain't
moments.
Crazy. Ain't it crazy?
You got the bread hole finger, new entry.
Rub off.
New entry. Pat Maroons, winning goal. That's right up there.
How about
that's
like, Gunnarsson?
That's right up there with the holy finger.
Gunnarsson at the urinal.
Tell and
oh,
Chief saying
yeah.
Pisser.
Pisser.
Chief yeah. Pisser, you're going to go way back. You had Pareko, we thought, murdering Ben Bishop with a shot. Remember that? Fell over. Sammy Blay and Berube having big balls by putting them in the lineup. This is going way
big
back.
Brass ones.
The Bennington.
Manitoba Miracle.
Bennington quote about him playing for the Bruins organization in the AHL, and he goes, oh, that's kind of neat.
And that's pretty cool.
When he didn't know who the coach was for
yes.
Dallas.
Yeah, Bennington's great.
And the Manitoba Miracle, which included, this is crazy.
I hate to do
Jack Kelly calls.
I hate to do audio forensics, but because I was so into this clip.
Rob off means.
I was listening to it. And
you
again,
your question.
Again, I think you have lost in translation.
No, Vladimir knew what he was doing.
No.
Yes, he did.
He literally. Vladdy responds with where he was sitting next to Ryan O'Reilly in the dressing room. He thought he was asking him, like, because he asked him a question, like, how does O'Reilly, when you see him in the dressing room, kind of rub off?
And you see how hard he works and plays the right way. How much does that rub off on you and the rest of the team? Rub off on.
But Vladdy responds with basically where he sat next to him.
They don't play every other day, okay?
If we have Vladdy's comment, he responds with where he sat next to him in the dressing room. He literally answered his question.
I used to see him in a different spot before all the time, like on the side kind of.
Laughter.
Laughter.
No, I did video forensics, Chuck. I found the video of him being asked the question. And right around the time where our friend says,
rub off on.
It was his eyes kind of squint a little bit. And his mouth goes from, you know, this general to kind of a little smirk. Like, he knows, I got him. I got a funny comment.
Yeah. Rub off on.
I just think, I'm guessing.
You guys do your charity work together this summer. Why don't you ask Vlad about
okay.
it?
Right about the time you're stealing a sign card from kids.
But listen, when you learn a new language, and back in the day, when you had to study Spanish or French in high school, if you had a friend, but if you had a friend who knew Spanish or French, what's the first thing you ask him? Swear words, slang. Like, that's how you learn the language, right?
Yes.
And I have a feeling that Vladdy does know what rub off means in a slang way, right? But probably not what it means literally.
What's the slang way, Chuck?
Well, it's kind of a... Do we have to really get into this?
No.
Next topic.
What's the rub off means?
Okay, moving on. We got a game 5 in Boston.
Do we not even know who the reporter was who asked that question? Can we not credit him?
Does he want to be credited?
I don't know if it matters. But that's in our moments. Playoff moments. I think we recapped all the big. Chuck losing his luggage is one of the big playoff
getting
moments.
Getting a new jacket out of it.
New sport coat. Lobster being served game 5. Stasiak going after a personal record game 5.
That's a lot of lobster rolls.
Yeah. Charlie saying that the lobster at Fenway wasn't up to his standards.
Great chowder, though.
Looking back on it. The baseball draft kind of came and went and nobody noticed. You think that's, well, the baseball world noticed, right? Yeah. In St. Louis, it didn't get a lot of play. But it is kind of fun to look at the list of first. Like, back in the day, if you were the number one overall pick, I think it was more likely than not you'd become a star. And I think in recent years, it's become less likely. So, Hoff printed out this list. 1980, Daryl Strawberry.
Good name.
Number one overall pick. Turned out pretty good. 77, it was Harold Baines. Hall of Famer. Just don't ask the Mad Dog.
Thanks to Tony.
Bob Horner, had a pretty good career until they got to St. Louis. Sean Dunstan on that list.
Another former Cardinal. Right? Yeah.
Who played left field, even though he was a shortstop. That's what I'm like. Tony will just put anybody anywhere.
Got a glove?
B.J. Surhoff had a very good career. He was a number one overall. Ken Griffey Jr., I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's okay.
Andy Bennis, former Cardinal, number one overall, had a pretty good career. Ben McDonald was always injured, right? Orioles. Ben McDonald, but Chipper Jones, first overall. Alex Rodriguez. So this is a stretch here. I skipped a couple names you've never heard of.
Even more, even say before 2014, you had a lot of really recognizable names. Like Carlos Correa was on it.
Correa and Gerrit Cole. So you went from Strasburg, Harper, Gerrit Cole, Carlos Correa. And then the unfortunate Houston pick, is it Apple, Chuck, or Apple? Mark Apple, Apple?
Mark Appel?
Appel.
Oh, correct your guy, Malleable. Okay.
Appel.
Look, they had a choice between him and Chris Bryant, and they took the pitcher.
Correct. One of the Houston mistakes, right? Brady Aiken. Look at this, though. Talk about the tanking. Astros, number one overall pick, 12, 13, 14. First overall pick.
And they really only hit on one of them, right?
Right, on Correa.
Yeah.
But they hit on Bregman.
Yes.
They hit on Springer.
Yes.
With very high picks.
They also already had Dallas Keuchel and Jose Altuve, which helps.
Brady Aiken, left-handed pitcher, and then Dansby Swanson.
Having a good year.
Swapped in the Shelby Miller deal.
Maybe the worst trade.
Haven't asked Tony about that one lately.
Don't ask him.
You think he would
that
say,
would be the last.
No, that was Stu that did that. He was running the club. Mickey Moniak.
Oh, yeah.
2016 first overall pick.
The malleable Mickey Moniak.
Royce,
nickname.
Royce Lewis. Anyone? Now we're getting a little more recent, so it takes a while. Casey Mize. And then this year's number one overall was Adelaide Rich. Was it Richman? Richman, Chuck? You're the pronouncer guy today.
Catcher, Oregon
Catcher
State.
Catcher for the Orioles.
Absolute stud. Switch
David,
hitter.
David Price was the number one overall, but there's just a lot of names. The Matt Bushes of the world that pop up. Brian Bullington.
That was he was a Mac guy, right? Wasn't he? What's the school there in Indiana? Ball State.
Ball State, you are correct.
David Letterman.
This is kind of your era when you're playing college ball, right? That 2002, 2003, 2004-ish. Joe Mauer turned out. Josh Hamilton. A lot. Of, I mean, there's plenty of great picks, but there's also just a lot of busts in there.
And how about Matt Bush? Matt Bush had his demons. And I remember early on, I think right after he was drafted, he was the hometown kid that was drafted by San Diego. And I think he went to a bar and he was drunk and bit a bouncer or something like that. So he went through his own. It wasn't quite the levels and depths of Josh Hamilton, but then he came back and was a darn good relief pitcher for a year or two. I don't know if he's still in the game, but he was turned into a relief pitcher that was throwing almost 100 miles an hour for the Rangers in the last couple of years.
I would say the majority of these guys made it to the big leagues and had decent careers, but then there's just probably every third at least, and more recently, but every third maybe is somebody that either didn't make it or just sort of flamed out.
And that's where baseball, it seems like, is getting smarter. And if you go back, it's almost 20 years now that Moneyball came out. But the whole MO for the A's was, look, we love these high school prospects. I mean, the guys that are 5-tool players or the high school arms that throw 98 miles an hour. But so many of those guys become busts that the A's were saying, look, we don't have the money to lose out on those high picks. And that's why there's more of a guarantee with these college players where you have 2, 3, or in some cases 4 years of stats at a higher level. I mean, imagine trying to break down high school guys. And I know they all play in these showcases in the summer, but high school guys who are swinging aluminum bats. You know, it's hard to project that 18-year-old body, who fills out, you know, who can hit for power later in their career. Sometimes it takes a long time. Jose Martinez was drafted as, what, a 16 or 17-year-old? And he's down in the minors for 10 years and finally becomes a solid major league player at about age 30.
In fact, this week's Tony Talk, Charlie, not only do we get into flipping the buffet over, pregame, postgame speeches, what you see with Craig Berube, all the video that's being released, how often does that happen in baseball? We did talk about flipping the buffet and getting mad and screaming at the players, but also high school versus college. And I think the skipper said that is a great question.
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't count in the Martin Frank ledger. But we did have a great question.
I don't mean to spill too much from the podcast, but he did say that he felt bad flipping the table with the food on it. So afterwards, it was just he wouldn't let them go to the food table, which I would have loved to have seen in the locker room. Matt Holliday with a plate walking up and Tony just going, no, put that down.
Put it down.
This would be hilarious. I know we have Kamish coming on, right?
In about a minute.
But this would be funny.
What if Kamish was in there on any of those?
I bet you he has some good stories about that. We should ask him. It'd be funny, though, if, look, these major league players, I mean, multimillionaires, they all stay at the Ritz everywhere. They travel. People carry their bags. They have this great food spread. It'd be funny if after the game, the Cardinals played terrible, and Tony's like, you know what? You guys do not deserve to eat this. And he brought in some random fans. Just brought in random fans, like 10 dudes, to go there and eat their food.
Tony, there's roasted turkey. I'm starving. I played for 4 hours. Look at the pasta salad. You're not going to let me have that?
No, we got Tom and Susie over here. They were in the bleachers. Come on. Come on over here. Yeah, we got a lobster tail. I don't. It's not good enough for Marlo, but you might want to sample it.
Very malleable.
Malleable.
Or is it malleable?
I learned a lesson. First of all,
see, this is where I have to say this. No, 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 no. This is a lesson because, first of all, I just want to say this. No one likes corrector guy, right? Like, at all.
Correct.
Doesn't matter if it's on radio or in real life. No one likes corrector guy. No one likes one-upper. So if you're going to be corrector guy, you damn well better be right. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't be.
I agree.
You can't be corrector guy and be wrong. You just can't do that.
No, I agree. I learned a lesson. Not only don't correct Chuck unless you're really sure. Don't be a corrector guy. I've always thought it was malleable. Like when
malleable.
You talk about a player's skill, his ability.
Down. Wow. Ooh, the British.
I didn't know. I learned.
Malleable.
That's look the at British pronunciation.
Look at the Bradley U shining through.
But sometimes this happens. Like I got in a little argument at work once about Oscar Sundquist because he's called Oscar Sundquist. But I actually went to the pronunciation, and I do believe it should be Sundqvist. But I think it's the Americanized version of Sundqvist. And it's hard to say that, actually. So all the broadcasters say Sundquist, but I think technically if you're over there, it'd be Sundqvist.
Well, I bet you even, like, do you think Gunnarsson is actually Gunnarsson? Well, there's probably a different emphasis that you could put on it.
Emphasis on the right syllable.
It is the Hollywood Casino Press Box, brought to you by our good friends at Hollywood Casino. And don't forget, Triad Bank will bring you Take It to the Bank throughout this day, which means, Chuck, we got to check the text line.
I have been.
855-282-8255. 855-282-8255. Triad Bank brings you Take It to the Bank. We're also going to Hockey Talk with Strick in the noon hour, but you can text in at any time. Brought to you by our good friends at Triad Bank, located in Frontenac, Missouri. Not Illinois, Chuck, in case you wanted to correct me.
Going back to our kind of baseball is broken with the system, this is going back couple minutes here. Jim and Crestwood, teams also want to send down young players to extend when they're eligible for arbitration. Larry the Cam Girl says, sounds like you're more mad he's on your fantasy team and isn't up anymore. And he nailed that with Keston Hiura, because a second baseman that hits for power, you don't find a lot of those guys. When you scoop that guy up right when he's called up and you get him, and then he hits about 5 homers and about 70 at-bats, whatever it is, and they send him down to bring up the contract of Travis Shaw, who is playing terribly. That's what I hate about baseball. And I know we're getting into a larger argument, but baseball doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense when you're trying to get young fans, when you have teams purposely holding back the best players like Vlad Guerrero Jr. for the only reason to get the extra year of control. That does not make sense.
Well, let's bring in the Hall of Famer, the Commish. Rick Hummel joins us, presented by Lakeside Roofing. Commish, how are you?
I'm fine, boys. How are you?
We are doing just fine. I had a topic earlier where I said the NL Central is providing the Cardinals false hope. Do you agree with that premise? As you look at the standings, everything's sort of fine, but it seems like the division for maybe the last month has just sort of been treading water.
Well, the division, though, is probably the best division in the league for balance. I mean, if you took all the last place teams in baseball and put them in a six-team tournament, the Reds would win easily over the Giants, Baltimore, Kansas City, Seattle, and whoever else is last in the West. The Reds are a much better team than any of those teams. So you're not going to have those gaudy numbers in the Central for wins. 92 wins might get it done. So you ignore what the records look like and just try to keep pace with the teams that are ahead of you.
Commission, his first outing, even though he didn't have a great line, he had the error by Fowler in the first start. Hennessy Cabrera struck out 5 guys, though, and you saw the stuff. He's throwing 95 from the left side. He's got some secondary pitches. How odd yesterday to see a guy with stuff like that, and he throws, 95 pitches and doesn't get one swing and miss. That's almost hard to do.
That is hard to believe for a guy who throws that hard. And it has some pretty good breaking ball, too. His changeup was just so-so, but the breaking ball is all right, and the fastball's it plays. They fouled off a whole potload of pitches and laid off some other ones and put. You know, they had 8 hits and 2 walks, too, so they had a lot of base runners. He faced 25 guys, and 10 of them got on. So for whatever reasons, he's not quite ready for prime time, and I don't think we'll see him take that start Sunday at Chicago.
Yeah, if you had a guess, who would that be? Would they go back to Waka? We said that Ponce de Leon scheduled a pitch between now and then for Memphis, but he doesn't have to. What do you think they'll do?
I think they'll go with Waka. I mean, the guys down in Memphis are not exactly lighting up. They were hoping, I think, that Reyes would be farther advanced, but he got mauled the other day. He had 3 home runs and 7 runs and 4 2/3 innings, so I don't think that's the right time to bring him up just yet. He'll be up soon enough, but Waka's actually pitched pretty well against the Cubs for most of his career, and even that last game in Chicago, except for that horrible pitch he threw to that Crash Davis catcher that hit that grand slam off, he was pitching all right until then.
So Waka, the likely choice, is it as simple as he's had a chance to clear his head, work on his mechanics? I mean, why would he be different at this point?
Well, I just see him throwing a lot better. He threw hard last night. He was throwing 91, 92 before. Now he's throwing 95. Now maybe he's throwing more fastballs than before, which is probably you can afford to do that in relief. Like John Gant has done that. Now he's become from a mediocre starter to lights-out reliever by throwing mostly fastballs. And maybe Michael's adopted that approach at least to throw more fastballs and less of his cutter and curveball, which are secondary pitches, but not that they're inferior to his fastball and his changeup. So I think I liked him a lot last night, and if they can get 5 innings out of him Sunday, that'd be fine.
What's the read on Molina? This is, I mean, I think when we first heard it, they thought, oh, no big deal, but since then there have been indications it could be a while.
I wouldn't think he'd be back before about 2 weeks. That would time it up just about the time that Albert arrives. I think Yadier would love to be playing when Albert gets here on the 21st, so that'd be my guess.
And Weider's filling in that insurance policy. Now, in past years, they've always had real nice guys who didn't have real deep resumes. We liked interviewing them. They're friendly folks. But
nice guys.
They've had some really great backup catchers in terms of personality, but this year you got a guy who can produce, and we've seen a little bit of that from Matt Weider's.
Yeah, and he's caught well, too. He's thrown well. Sometimes you go on wins and losses, how the catcher's doing. Well, they'd won 4 in a row before last night, and Kisner caught one of them, but Weider's caught the other three. And he didn't, I don't think he had much to apologize for last night. They ran up against a better pitcher last night. Castillo's one of the best guys in the league.
Kamish, if we're staying positive here, Dakota Hudson, after a rough April, was really solid in the month of May. I know there's a lot of traffic on the base pass sometimes when he's out there, but what do you see him doing differently here that's allowed him to turn it around?
I think he's just got more confidence, and he's throwing more strikes, getting ahead in counts. He's got quite a few pitches, but he can get ahead in the count. He can bury a hitter with it. Let's keep throwing sinker balls at him or mixing them up. But he gets ground balls more than anybody on their staff, and their infield is pretty good.
The Commish, Rick Hummel with us, talking a little baseball. Cards, Reds, 2 more days, then up to Wrigley for the weekend. And in terms of the Cards lineup, I mean, they did move it around a little bit, but Carpenter's back. Because Fowler just didn't hit, is that why you think it was a sort of quick experiment?
Well, Fowler didn't hit, and Carpenter started hitting. Now Carpenter is producing. He's not like producing June and July of last year in Chicago, but hit a home run last night. He's done well up there. And Fowler has done all right. You know, his on-base percentage is really good for the season, but everything else about his stats is kind of mediocre. He's got like 15 RBIs hitting down in the middle of the order at much of the season. He's got 250-something average, so he's. But in 5 games, he didn't get on, except he got hit in the foot 3 times. He didn't get any hits or walks.
And, Kamish, with Paul DeJong, he started off the season so great. I was trying to search on Twitter because I saw this tweet last night, and this is from Cardinals Gifts, but he put out the stat that since being hit on the wrist May 22nd, Paul DeJong is slashing a .56 batting average, .227 on base, and .283 slug. And this is after that first month he was just gangbusters. You wonder if he's a little compromised right now.
Well, that's a good question. He hasn't said anything about that. Maybe he wouldn't volunteer that anyway, but it's something to look at. I think it's just he's seeking his level a little bit. He's not a .325 hitter yet. Maybe never will be, but he's not getting extra base hits as he was before. That's probably what we're looking at for the most part. I don't see him compromised, but he's not the same player for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Kamish, any sense that the Cardinals would talk to Ozuna? We heard about the agent change a few weeks back. It's not Boris, but you don't hear any talk. I mean, what do you think their interest level is in even pursuing Ozuna, who's hit pretty well?
I would hope it's high. I think they want to make sure his shoulder's all right. He's only 28 years old. He isn't 31 like some of these other guys, you know. And Goldschmidt's 2 or 3 years older than Ozuna. They give him the money. Ozuna hits the ball harder than anybody on their team, maybe in the league on a consistent basis, except for that one clownish play when he tried to get on top of the left field wall and make a play. He's played a good outfield. He made a really good play last night and looked easy. He took the ball over his shoulder at the track that somebody hit there. So I think they need him. He's a professional cleanup hitter. He's got, like, what, 53 hits and 51 RBIs. Pretty good production there. Now, could he have more RBIs? Yeah. He's had plenty of chances, but he's on pace for 120, and that's a little hard to turn your back on that.
Right. I mean, I think if you're looking at the lineup, you need him. I'm just curious if they feel that way, and if the agent change is any sort of tell at all, does that mean anything?
I don't know. They've always gotten along pretty well with Boris, so I don't read too much into that just yet. I do read into the fact they don't seem all that enamored of Tyler O'Neill anymore. I'm sure his spirit's been kind of broken. He had 7 home runs in the first 12 or 13 games at Memphis. Now he's hitting 220, waiting for the call-up that never came. So I don't know that they factor him in as their left fielder for next year. And maybe Ozuna is the guy.
Kamish, what do you think an Ozuna contract would look like? He's making, you know, 12.2 here in his last year before hitting free agency. And he'll be 29 next year. It's kind of odd because he had some really good years with the Marlins, but sometimes it's almost like every other year he has that breakout year, and obviously it's happening right now at a good time when he hits free agency this winter.
Yeah, well, even the year he had last year when he was hurt, he had 280 with 23 and 80-something. That's a pretty good year anyway for a bad year. So I think you'd have to start – it has to be on the north side of $100 million for – 5 years, we're going to go that way. And if you do 5 years, that puts him at 33 when it's over. He's in good shape. I mean, his legs are fine. Nothing wrong with his body other than his shoulder is not as good as it could be, but he's throwing better than he used to this season. But, yeah, you'd have to give him $20 million a year probably for however many years that he or you want to do that. But I think it's worth exploring because I don't see how their lineup is any kind of fearsome without him in it.
You mentioned Reyes earlier. Do you think they had an ideal timeline in mind? And at this point, would you say after the All-Star break?
Well, the ideal timeline in spring training was about May 15th, you know, until he decided to punch the wall with his left hand. At least he used his left hand. So I think you'll see him here in 2 weeks. If he has one more decent start, maybe two. But at least he has to have one when he pitches. They're in Reno would be his next start. I don't know what the ballpark looks like in Reno, but he's going to have to pitch out there this weekend.
And
if
before
he does well there, you can bring him up, and then kind of depends on how Walker or whoever does in the start Sunday in Chicago. But he'll be here before the All-Star break, well before.
Well before, okay. Well, good, because I think they could use an infusion and fresh arm. And here's a random one before we let you go. We were talking about pre and post game speeches, how you see it in hockey, not necessarily in baseball. And we then kind of stumbled into how Tony occasionally would close off the food, or years ago he dumped over the food table. Were you ever in the locker room, the clubhouse, when he came in and said, "That's it, no food for anybody"?
No, he would do that before they opened the locker room doors, but you could see players not eating anything. You knew what had happened.
And you were not there for the table flip.
No, but you can see the room was closed off, and players are hurriedly dressing, trying to get back to the hotel. At least he did it. He didn't do it on getaway day. He'd do it like a Saturday afternoon, you know, right, when they still had plenty of time to go somewhere, but he would time it perfectly.
Yeah, I think Matt Holliday said he started packing protein bars just in case Tony got pissed, just to be ready. All right, Kamish, thanks for checking in.
Okay, guys.
All right, Rick
thanks.
Hummel. Charlie, we have a baseball team in town. Also, we used to joke at the Two Fox that if you looked at our rundown,
Blues mention,
occasionally there'd be a Blues mention that they had a game that night.
We also have a hockey team, and now more baseball.
They have a 9 o'clock start in Edmonton or whatever, and it would get a mention. It was worth noting, but you didn't have any interviews because they were out of town. This time around, it's become Cards mention, and the Cards play tonight. It's really weird. I never in my life thought you'd see it where even a Cards-Cubs weekend would just sort of be in the background.
But to be fair, it doesn't have to be like this. For example, the Cardinals could be really good right now.
They could be.
Like, we shouldn't give them a pass just because the Blues are awesome. And I hate to bring up Boston because we're trying to beat Boston right now, but Boston wins everything. And it's not like, oh, the Bruins are good. The Pats don't need to be good. Oh, the Red Sox are good. I mean, all of their teams are good every year.
Well, and it doesn't change the expectation, but I think you don't pay attention for the average sports fan is not paying as close of attention as they normally would to the baseball team.
100%, and that's why this slide for the Cardinals in the month of May happened at the perfect time because everybody's focused on the Blues as they should be.
As they should. All right, quick break here, 11:30. It's the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Martin Kilgren, Chuck Marlowe, Hoff, Plowsy, all here. In for Frank. He's in Boston. I'll be there later today. And a reminder, this hour brought to you in
part
by...
Well, the commission's a sponsor, Martin, and it's Lakeside Roofing. Lakeside Roofing, established in 1972, has a solid reputation for excellence in the roofing industry. Their philosophy is focused around a relentless commitment to customer service, quality products, and outstanding workmanship. Lakeside Roofing's reputation is one of reliability, trust, high-quality work, and competitive prices. They feature the finest quality roofing materials and provide expert installation. Call the professionals at Lakeside Roofing for your home or business in Illinois. Call 618-344-2800 or Missouri. Call 314-241-5253. Or you can find them online at lakesideroofing.com. And the Gatesworth, the finest in senior living. Aunt, uncle, mom, dad. Visit the Gatesworth, 1 McKnight Place, or thegatesworth.com.